And welcome to Off Grid with me, Void.
And me, Dave.
Where it's not really about cryptic crosswords. Although, this episode might be a little bit more crosswordy, nerdy, wordy. Because
we've got a bunch of clips with us and the general talking about all sorts of stuff as usual, but things that didn't quite make the regular episodes, and so they might be a bit more crosswordy.
Just a bit. But we still think there's lots of fun stuff in there for you to listen to, which is why we've put the episode together.
Because the bits that are absolutely crap, we're throwing away.
We do have some form of quality control. Honest.
So, on with the episode. Enjoy yourselves, folks.
I got really cross once. This is quite a long time ago. It was a Brummy crossword in The Guardian. And lots of the clues and solutions were about blood in one way or another.
Right.
And then at the end of it, I noticed that the middle column reading down read Ichor, I-C-H-O-R.
Oh, right.
I thought, oh, what a brilliant Nina to get that in as well. But then I got shouted down on 15 squared. I said, no, it's just a coincidence and, la, la, la. And I said,
that seems very deliberate.
Astronomically small chance of it happening, and got into quite a tiz about it. In the end, I emailed Brummy himself and said, that's not a coincidence, is he? And he said, yeah, total coincidence. Didn't mean that at all.
Oh, wow.
Oh, he missed the trick there. He should have said, no, definitely put that in there.
What, Nina? What are you talking about?
Oh, dear. So, I've briefly talked about yo-yos before. And in the 1998 yo-yo craze...
Which we all remember.
We all remember very well, of course. Now, when you're playing yo-yo, sometimes your string gets snagged. And a yo-yo will suddenly wind up and thwack back into your hand in a very nasty manner. Mm-hmm. And we coined the term for this as being a Beckham, because it was an unexpected kickback. And in the 1998 World Cup, I think Beckham got sent off for one of those.
Hey-ho.
Yeah, I got this straight away because a guy, I've heard it's used in cooking. It was obvious, but could I parse it? And then had that moment of, oh, never seen that before. That's clever.
Yeah, I've seen it, but very rarely and not recently.
I parse it almost straight away because I've done it.
You like doing that sort of thing.
Prime cuts of farm sheep's rump. Four.
Okay, I'm not going to work. What was that then?
You have to write that down.
Oh, very good, yes. Father Jack kind of word.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Very good.
And this person sent some feedback saying, well, you've obviously done one of those proper cryptics. Yes, it's fine. I'm not sure I'd put the word arse in. it's not that bad, is it?
Anyway, what word leapt out for you from the grid?
Well, I thought about choosing jug because in one other answer were the string of letters G-E-L and in another were L-A-R. So I could have had a jug-L or a jug-glar, but I thought I was pushing it. So in the end, I went for a complete word and I picked grabber.
Grabber, okay.
A thing or person which grabs. And
indeed.
This reminded me of the litter picker, which I own.
Okay.
Why do I own a litter picker?
Because you're one of those people who likes to go out on a group outing to tidy up the local area.
That's a lovely answer, and very much the parking cars dum-dum answer. Perfectly reasonable, but that is not the reason I got one, because I thought it would be useful for when I was doing stilt walking gigs.
Ah, okay.
And indeed it was, because if you happen to be juggling on stilts and you drop, then
it's a long way down.
It's a long way down to pick up the ball or club or whatever. Actually, I can just about pick stuff up from the ground by taking a very wide stance and squatting and bending over carefully.
Listeners, form that image in your minds.
or not. Maybe you can do some editing this time to remove that thought. But yeah, I tied the handle end of the litter picker to my belt, and then it just hangs there while I'm doing other things. But if I should need it, I can reach down and grab a club or steal a hat off someone's head, which is always a nice way of starting a conversation. But this also reminded me of the things that people say to you when you're still walking.
Right. What's the weather like up there?
Ding. Anymore?
I get that just for being tall.
Right, yeah. You're tall. That's another classic. Where'd you get your trousers? Are those your real feet? Do you play basketball? Etc, etc.
Goodness me.
Yeah. Now, when you've done enough still working gigs, you soon get bored of hearing these cliches.
I'm sure you have retorts for many of them.
Well, you see, my friend Paul once said of these cliche remarks from a parallel juggler's experience. He said, yes, you may have heard, can you eat the apple, a million times before, but the person's really, they're just being friendly. They're taking an interest in what you're doing, mm-hmm. and they want to interact with you, but they don't know what to say, or they don't know how to join in. So they say the first thing that comes into their heads, you know. And I think that's a very sensible way of looking at it. So he did make me think. I mean, I probably would have had some retorts for these sort of remarks, which I would have used.
Yeah, so it's keep it to light joshing and don't get snarky is the
idea. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, I think Paul saying that made me think, yeah, actually, just chill out and don't be an arse when you're responding to the next person who cliches your subject, whatever it may be, because, you know, they might be just trying to start a conversation.
Yes.
And another thing I can think of, a parallel example again, would be, oh, I could never do cryptic crosswords, which is a very common response whenever you mention that you have the slightest interest in them. And maybe they're just dismissing the subject and saying I have no interest, or maybe they're saying I don't really understand them, and maybe they want you to give them a hint or something. I mean, don't buttonhole someone and pull
and assume that's what they mean.
yeah,
I think people who are good at maths get that as well, don't they? You get someone who'll go, oh no, I'm no good at maths.
Yeah,
almost at a kind of being proud of it kind of level, which is like, well.
Yeah, you wouldn't say, oh, I can't read. Yeah.
I could never tie my shoelaces, dear me.
But yeah, so that's all. That's my point, is be nice, especially if you've been hired as an entertainer, I would say.
Yes. And if you're a stilt walker, you have been hired.
Oh. Very good. Very good.
Frightfully sorry.
Now, is it... I think it's genetics, where there's the case that some researchers make the foolish mistake of using Excel when they shouldn't. And so Excel auto-corrects some of the names of the genes. I'm not sure if I'm remembering the right thing. Does that ring bells
yeah.
with you?
It turns them into dates.
Right.
Oh dear.
Yeah, which is apparently a very common error in a lot of large genetic data sets.
Yeah, I mean, Excel can be very annoying. Well, any kind of autocorrect thing can either be really helpful or really annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you probably shouldn't be using Excel for non-spreadsheet purposes, really.
Yeah. It's a bane of my life, is people doing that.
Oh, you have to proofread and correct them.
Well, yeah.
Oh, entirely off topic.
Yes.
I was watching the chase today, and the quiz question was, workers in which industry included people called pullers and beaters? And I went for weaving as one of the multiple choice answers, and it wasn't. It was something else, and I thought, oh, I'll have to ask Dave about that. You're looking confused, so it's ringing no bells with you.
I'm assuming maybe because of so many of my blurbs that I've gone off have been to do with printing. There's certainly pulling the paper off of the press, so pullers, but I can't imagine what the beaters. Maybe perhaps in the old, really old hand presses, putting the ink on.
Right, yeah, it was printing.
Yeah.
Oh, when you sort of beat the pads full of ink.
Could be.
Yeah. Aside, there's one for the outtakes.
Yeah. In terms of scientists giving things amusing or names that they think are amusing, at any rate, it's across all the fields, isn't it? Because with particle physics, the particle that holds the quarks together is called the gluon.
Yes.
And it's just because it glues things together, and it's just like, really?
There was a famous technique for studying DNA that was invented by a scientist called Dr. Southern. So when someone came up with a version for RNA, they, of course, called it a northern blot, and then for proteins became a western blot.
There's also some... there was a couple of guys who were working... I think it was a physics paper, and the first guy's name was Alpha, A-L-P-H-E-R, and the other guy's name was Gamow, G-A-M-O-W. And there was a third fellow who was working in their field who had nothing to do with the paper, but they roped him in and put him on the author's list because his name was Beta, so that they could have Alpha, Beta, Gamow.
Yeah.
Of course. I'd be embarrassed if they hadn't done that.
Yeah.
Of course, there is the phenomenon where scientists discover an obscure beetle or something and they decide they're going to name it after their favourite pop star or writer, and then 10 years down the line the person they've named it after turns out to have been some horrendous person who did unspeakable awful things, and now you've got
as tends to happen
after them. And isn't there a trend for people to refer to the what's the new telescope called?
James Webb
Space Telescope. Yeah, and they're now calling it the Just Wonderful Space Telescope because apparently he wasn't the most wonderful of people to staff. Yeah. Do you know what was interesting about Gladstone's hands?
Gladstone's hands.
Yeah.
And referring back to last episode, when I say hands, I mean hands.
Did he have like polydactyly or something?
Well, you might say he developed the opposite, because up until September 1842, there was nothing remarkable about his hands, but he managed to lose the forefinger of his left hand in an accident while reloading a gun.
Ah.
Huh.
I don't know if he was trying to get out of military service or something. Probably not. Just an aside, really.
Sounds very painful.
Yeah, he wore a glove or a finger sheath, whatever that is, after that, I read.
This sounds like... Do you know about Harold Lloyd, the silent film star?
A pair of glasses and a smile.
That's the fella. He lost a finger, or possibly two, handling a stage bomb, which actually went off and blew off a couple of his fingers. And you kind of go, huh?
Stage bomb. Who didn't read the memo?
Well, quite, yes. The same people who was working on Alec Baldwin's film recently, I suspect.
Oh, yeah. That's horrible.
But, yeah, in subsequent films, you can see that he is wearing a glove with a false finger on it.
Right.
So it's the same sort of thing as Gladstone, obviously. I can tell you where that comes from if you're interested.
Of course you can, and sure we are.
It's actually a shrunk, and it's another letter N. So when you had that kind of words like señorita or mañana or whatever, they were originally spelt with a double N, and it just got moved up and shrunken. So it's essentially an N.
Okay.
Like a mini me.
Yeah.
Or a
yeah, and when you have
mini me,
when you have mini me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that double N sound tells you to that you have to sort of put a Y in there, so it's señorita, señorita. Yeah.
In the New York Times, they also have a real gift for pun clues, and including a clue I remember fondly for Tilda, which was señorita's curves. I just thought that was a lovely. Deception.
That's nice.
I do like that. I guess in cryptic parlance, we might call that an oblique definition or a pun definition. But I do like how crosswords in whichever mode, be they a really chewy, quick crossword like the New York Times or a fine cryptic, often have us seeing words in different ways. And that to me is one of the gifts of solving and setting.
Yeah, definitely. You don't see many references to a description of the shape of a letter. I mean, the classic one is ball for O, but I've used right angle for a capital L once or twice, and I think there's lots of potential for that sort of thing.
There's occasional references to the shape of T's as well, aren't there? Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen two... about a set, I can't remember who it was, but someone who was moving the goalposts and that was shifting a letter H within a word. I thought that was very clever.
Oh, nice. That's really nice. Yeah. Although, does it depend on which type of sport you're thinking of?
Uh-huh. And whether you solve in upper or lower case.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
I think the assumption is that solvers are going to write in uppercase, isn't there? There's certainly been the occasional clue about rotating something where you're changing an N to a Z or vice versa.
Yeah.
True.
Or cursive. They were just sort of joined up across the line. Like,
It reminds me of a time with a bunch of friends of mine and someone was solving a crossword and trying to work out an anagram. And so he wrote the letters down in a little 3x3 grid formation, and another one of my friends was stood behind him looking over his shoulder, and she'd had a glass of wine or two, and she very stridently said, no, you have to write them in a circle and all the vowels have to be on the left and all the consonants have to be on the right. So this was an outrageous affront to her. I don't know what she'd have said if he'd done it in lowercase too. Oh, hello, Anna. Love you.
A couple of years ago, I think I'd posted just a silly joke image on whether it was Facebook at the time or Twitter that was a smear of sort of reddish colour and I labelled it madder, and then a smear of the opposite green colour and I labelled it anti-madder. But yeah.
Surely there should have been a third window for dark matter.
Ah, oh, I didn't think of that. Yeah, yeah, the black one. Yeah, silly jokes.
Yes,
like it. I like it now. You know, sometimes when you read a clue in cryptic mode and you sort of you're so ingrained in that mode that you don't even appreciate the surface making some sense.
Yes, there is. A friend of ours who is in the habit of reading cryptic clues out bit by bit.
Oh.
So he's immediately focusing on the cryptic aspect of
the
clue. Yeah,
I know the kind of way.
All
the work that Setter put into making a lovely flowing surface is just mangled, yeah.
You know who you are, dear friend, and we love you. Right. I think it's great when you get the chance to do that. And in fact, I have been an official sponsor of an international sports team.
Yeah, I bet it's not an Olympic basketball team, though.
It was an Olympic basketball team. Now, this came about on Twitter, of course.
Now, what's it going to be, General? Is it going to be juggling or kendama or kites or
something? Is there an international kendama competition?
There are international Kendama competitions. I founded the British and European Kendama Open Championships.
Are these team sports, though?
They're not. No, it's not Kendama. No. I'm getting the feeling that this is very much going to be edited out aside to go in the compilation shows. But yeah, on Twitter, this team was doing some fundraising and they were putting out various different offers. And now, what was it? Someone was complaining that this team had a lot of immigrant members in their sports team. And they wanted to sponsor a prize for the best indigenous player of the team.
Right.
And the team Twitter account was basically saying, come on, mate, don't be a dick. I paraphrase.
Yeah.
And they replied with, I'll tell you what, if you want to sponsor us £50, we'll make a trophy for the best, immigrant player. And this person didn't reply. And another person on Twitter did reply and said, I'm up for that. And I replied to Sally and said, yeah, me too. And so me and Sally Strawberry ended up jointly sponsoring the Strawberry Void trophy for the for the best player that season of the Iceland cricket team.
Iceland
cricket team. Cricket. Wow.
Of course.
How did you not get to cricket?
And who's the current holder of the trophy?
I don't think it's been awarded again. Because money got tight, unfortunately, for me.
You have to re-up every year?
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's fair enough.
I don't know. I just always, pay for the trophy and then you're good, you know?
Yeah. I didn't get my name on their shirts, but, I did have my icon on their website for a while. So, that'll do.
I had a bonus question, a bonus quiz question to throw
sure.
it in.
Shoot.
Go on then, throw it away.
I saw a nine across was oxen, which I would class as an unusual bovine plural.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a related question. Is what, according to the Oxford English Dictionary, is the plural of beef? One of two, maybe,
Beef. So beef is singular.
You think beeves?
It is beeves.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Not a word I've had reason to use yet, but I'll hope to find a reason to use it in the future.
Well, it's in the restaurant. You call the waiter across. You say, "We'll have two beeves, please."
So the plural of auroch, which is a extinct ancient cattle, sort of giant cattle
kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah, is auroxen.
Ah.
Well, I was going to say, I think aurochs was the singular, wasn't it, with an S on it?
Yes, that's it. Aurochs with an S was the singular, but auroxen is the plural. Yeah.
Mm.
Another one difficult to think of a reason to use it, especially now that there's zero of them around. But
well, unless you're singing along with that brilliant song, "Get Your Rocks Off, Get Your Rocks Off."
God.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Forgotten Twitter jokes of our time.
It's not even useful in Scrabble like the Zoe is,
True. Yeah. Dave, what word have you picked?
I've picked 10 across, which was cemeteries.
Oh, yeah.
Well, not just that, but mostly that one. A word that ultimately comes from a Greek word for a dormitory or sleeping place. So sort of treating sleep as a euphemism for death is not a new thing.
Right. Very long-term sleeping place.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But what I wanted to do was link it to 21 down, which is dovish.
Oh, right.
A word that I suspect was a bit of a grid filler. Perhaps it's not one of the world's most common ones. But if we put those two together, it leads us to the word columbarium. Are you familiar with that word at all?
I don't think I've heard the precise word before, but I think I can guess what it is because of Picasso's daughter's name.
Okay, would you like to elucidate on your guessing then?
Well, I think her name, if I remember rightly, was Columba.
It is a name that lots of people have, yes.
Yeah, which means dove.
It does indeed.
And so I'm guessing a columbarium is a dovecot?
Well, very nearly.
Okay.
In the sense that it's something which sort of resembles a dovecot. In fact, what it is it's a structure for storing cremation urns.
Which
is how it links into the cemetery, you see.
I see.
With its sort of little niche cubbyhole-like openings.
Right.
Yeah, so it got the name because it resembled a dovecot. By the way, although a dovecot is sort of the only type of cot that we still talk about, you could historically have had any sort, a sheep cot, if you like, because that just means a slight dwelling for sheltering small animals.
Okay.
And unsurprisingly, it's related to cottage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Columba is the genus name now for doves and pigeons. Anyway, yes, Columba as a name, it leads us to Saint Columba. See, I'd like to bring in these old saints, who I bring up primarily as a way to shoehorn in my obligatory printing reference, because Columba is the patron saint of bookbinders.
Oh, I was going to say, is he not a bit early for printing? Because he would have been a manuscript bloke, wouldn't he?
Absolutely. Well, yeah. He was a 6th century Irish abbot. I say Irish, travelled to Scotland a lot, because it was a sort of Gaelic kingdom, Dalriada, at the time, which encompassed west of Scotland, northeast of Ireland, so the whole sort of mushed in together.
Right. Was he Iona? Is that where he hung out?
That's absolutely, yeah. I mean, he founded several monasteries, but the chief among them was the one on Iona. So Iona Abbey, which is still there.
Do you rent it out?
Ha-ha! Is one of the oldest Christian religious centres in Western Europe. Deary me. So as with these sorts of people, you have these records of his life recounting various supposed prophecies and miracles, healing diseases, expelling spirits, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
One tale from his time in Scotland tells of him driving off a water beast. It says he came across a group of Picts burying a man who had been killed by a monster. And so he saves a swimmer from the monster with the sign of the cross and the imprecation, "Thou shalt go no further, nor touch this man. Go back with all speed." And the beast flees, terrified, to the amazement of the assembled Picts.
Did you say imprecation?
Imprecation, yes.
Right, yes. I thought you said implication.
Sorry. And the pertinent point of this story is that the text specifically states that this monster was swimming in the river
Ness?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, Columba is a sort of Latinization of the Irish column, which still means dove.
And yeah, still get people call that today.
Yes, there's a column in my office. If we add an A to the end of that, we get Colma. Which is the name of a small town in California, south of San Francisco.
Okay.
You're wondering where I'm going with this. All will become clear. The population of Colma is at most a couple of thousand.
Right.
Or at least the living population is.
Aha.
It was established as a sort of necropolis. So the non-living population is about 1.5 million.
Oh, cripes.
Yeah. By the late 1800s, San Francisco cemeteries were kind of at capacity. So churches and other organizations started buying up plots in the farmland south of the city. And then in the early 20th century, the city authorities put a moratorium on new urban burials and actually cut off funding for cemetery maintenance.
Hmm.
And then they passed an ordinance forcing out existing graves, meaning that upwards of 150,000 bodies were disinterred and moved out to this new location outside the city, a location that became the town of Colmar. Now, if you were one of these being moved and you had a relative available who was able to pay a $10 fee, you could be reburied in a proper plot and the headstone transferred. But as you can imagine, for a lot of the residents, there was no one to pay that fee. And so those ones were just reburied in mass graves, and the grave markers, the tombstones, stayed behind in San Francisco, where they got reused.
Oh.
It's like in the masonry of public buildings or as protection against coastal erosion on Ocean Beach. It's all very kind of, oh, okay. And by the way, I did look up, and yes, there are some columbariums in Colmar. But there are a few famous people buried in Colmar. There's William Randolph Hearst, the
publisher.
Yeah, newspaper tycoon, inspiration for
Citizen Kane.
Okay, yeah. There's Levi Strauss.
Not a composer, but a manufacturer of jeans.
Yes, denim jeans pioneer. His company was based in San Francisco. There's a certain Giuseppe DiMaggio, better known as Joe.
Yes. So that's the answer to where did you go, Joe DiMaggio?
Yeah, well, I mean, he played for the New York Yankees, but he was born and he died in California, so lots of backwards and forwards.
Right.
There's Vince Guaraldi.
Oh.
Does that name mean anything to you?
I've heard the name. I'm going to say he's an entertainer, maybe an actor-singer type.
Singer is closer, not actor. He's the
musician.
Musician.
Band leader.
Yeah, yeah, sort of jazzy music. He was the composer of the music for the Peanuts animated TV movie specials. You know, kind of It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown and all that kind of stuff. So that gets in my obligatory film music reference, sort of. And the other famous resident of Colmar is Wyatt Earp.
Oh, okay.
Famous for the gunfight at the OK Corral in the Arizona town of...
Tombstone. Hey.
There we go. That's well nice. Done. Yeah.
Nice.
Yes.
Now, when you first mentioned columbaria, that made me think of a news story I saw recently where... someone has decided that, you know, these ancient burial mounds that people find every now and then, and we've got quite a few here in Britain.
The sort of Paleolithic stuff.
Yeah, that stuff. Yeah. And they were burial chambers.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's recreated a modern one in the old-fashioned style, and you can book a slot for your remains to be placed in.
All right.
Yes, if you care about where your body goes after you die. I was thinking, oh, that's quite a neat thing.
That's a nice idea.
And then I watched the news clip through and they got to the end and they said, of course, there will be limited space. And as time goes on, more and more people will be looking to book a place here.
I can see this is leading a
100-year limit.
A 100-year limit?
Which, of course, you could... renew once your time had passed, but once again we get back to your point of if you have some descendants there to, you know, attend to your grave.
Yeah, I thought you were leading up to what the fee was going to be to book yourself a plot in this place, and it was going to be something ridiculous.
I can't remember how much it was, if they even said what it was.
Yeah.
The other reason I was attracted to Mincemeat and Operation Mincemeat is that there was a very, very good crossword puzzle based on Operation Mincemeat.
Oh, right.
Oh, I've not heard of this one.
So it was a thematic bard puzzle that appeared in the Magpie, a magazine which publishes some of the toughest sort of bard puzzles around, in similar sort of style to the Listener and the Inquisitor puzzles.
Right.
Yeah, so it was a puzzle by a setter called Pointer, who has a history of setting puzzles with red herrings, very elaborate red herrings. And he set this puzzle, and it, on the face of it, it appeared to be a puzzle about the Dambusters raid. And there were various clues or hints to, or pointers, if you will, to the Dambusters, like the name of the region that was bombed and the code name for the operation. But in fact, what you had to highlight in the final grid was Huelva, which is the place where the corpse was found in Spain. And mincemeat. It was an extremely clever puzzle, and a lot of people went down the Dambusters route and missed the actual theme of the puzzle. I mean, that was a deliberate red herring.
Oh yeah,
exceptionally
a red
devious.
Herring as a tribute to a red herring. Yeah,
yeah.
This is reminding me of the fact that I think I'm writing here in remembering this. That during the Second World War, in the early days of the Second World War, whenever people were signing up to the military and they had to fill in lots of forms, and if anyone ever said that they were interested in cryptic crosswords, they got sent to Bletchley Park.
Oh, really?
So Poynter would have ended up there, no doubt.
Yes, I'm sure. Because there was also that that story about the Daily Telegraph crossword, I think it was, that somehow military intelligence thought that it was leaking information about the was it the D-Day operations?
The D-Day,
or
the names of the beaches and all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
yeah. You'd think this is a story that we had talked about before, but I don't think we have.
It's a very famous one in crossword land, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
There was a puzzle, for anyone who doesn't know, that was published, and some of the answers happened to be sword, Omaha, Juno. I can't remember if it was all five of the names. So it was three or four of the names of the code names of the Normandy landing beaches, I think.
Yeah.
And someone in high command saw this and had an absolute fit and thought, oh my God, someone's leaking our secrets somehow via the Daily Telegraph crossword. And it was just an entire coincidence, which everyone had to be utterly convinced of and calmed down before the whole operation could go ahead.
And then the crossword setters got shot.
Yeah. Was sent to Bletchley Park in chains.
Yes. Have either of you been to Bletchley Park?
I haven't, no.
I haven't, no.
It's quite an interesting place.
Interesting place, I'm sure.
One day. I've got a couple of asides, which since I've got them, they'll go into outtakes, but I'll save them anyway. The film is set in Orange Springs, Florida. And I did try to find an olive company who were based there, but unfortunately I couldn't find one because that would have been just, you know, a nice little circle. Yeah. I did find a company that was called Olive Queen, but they're based in California, unfortunately. But I can kind of link it by saying Olive Thomas's character in the film wasn't an Olive Queen, but she was a Ginger King, because that was her character's name.
That's terrible.
It is terrible, and I apologise. Also in The Flapper, there was an uncredited appearance as a schoolgirl for someone called Norma Shearer. Does that name ring a bell?
That does not ring a bell.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's not that well remembered these days, I think, because she retired from acting quite early in 1942. But she did win an Oscar in 1930 for The Divorcee. And I was looking at her other films, and one I thought was interesting was a 1939 film she was in called The Women, which had the tagline, "It's all about men," but which only featured female actors. So Joan Crawford was in it, Rosalind Russell, Paulette Goddard, Joan Fontaine. And they went so far down this line that even on set, if there was any picture in the set, it had to have women in it and not men. And even all the pet animals were female. And the only exception was Douglas Fairbanks Jr., who was on the back of a magazine that someone was reading.
That's quite unusual for its time, just to have a women-only cast, I would have thought.
It's quite intriguing. If that turns up on Turner Classic Movies at some point, I think I'll record that to watch sometime. And one final thing, Suzanne Caron, who I hadn't heard of, Caron with a double A, she had a bit part in The Women, and she was later in films with The Three Stooges and Bela Lugosi, but not at the same time. In the 1980s, she moved into a rent-controlled apartment in Manhattan, and this building was later bought by one Mr. D. Trump, who decided that he wanted to evict all the tenants and tear it down. But a court ruling went against him, and he had to keep all the rent-controlled renters. And I don't understand the logistics of it, but at some point down the road in the legal proceedings, Suzanne Caron got a $750,000 compensation fee out of him. So, hooray!
Yeah. Very nice.
Good luck to her.
Yes. Yeah. And that's all I have on the subject that started out as olives.
Do you want another supplementary?
Yeah.
Show off your orb knowledge. Which member of Killing Joke co-wrote the song?
Okay, so how many members of Killing Joke can I name? And I think the answer to that is two.
We'll go for the obvious one.
None at all.
The obvious one was probably get you there.
The lead singer's called Jazz, but I can't remember his surname.
Mm.
And the bassist is called Youth. Right,
yeah.
So I'm guessing it was Youth because he's done a lot of writing and production work and worked with lots of other musicians famously over the years.
Yeah, that's the one.
Mm. And in fact, there's a Nirvana song. Now, which one is it? I think it's "Come As You Are," which I only very recently was listening to on the radio. I was listening to a Killing Joke song on the radio, and my girlfriend pointed out that it was sounded almost exactly the same, or the bass line did, to "Come As You Are" by Nirvana, which I had not heard before. But since she pointed out, I went, "Oh yeah!" And indeed, there were legal proceedings over this.
Oh, I didn't realise that. I was fond of Killing Joke. I'm showing my age now, but I didn't know that he was involved with the Orb at a later stage in his career.
No, I didn't know he'd worked with the Orb, but yeah.
But yeah, as you say, he's done a lot of work with quite a number of bands, production work and writing work.
Oh, by the way, I've just been checking on Discogs. I have actually got something, a piece of music that Youth was involved in, because I suspected that amongst all those many bands that he dealt with, that one that I do listen to, Art of Noise, he might have done. And there was a 7-inch edition of their track Art of Love, so he produced that. So anyway, yes, going back to your last question, sorry, this was me researching while you were asking. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode. We hope you've enjoyed those bits and bobs. If you haven't already subscribed, we're still going to ask you to do that, and show notes will, as always, be at offgrid.tlmb.net. And this is the bit where we traditionally suggest that you follow us on various social media. The landscape there has undergone, let's say, some upheaval since our last episodes. The bird site is now an X bird site. Pebble has come and gone, causing hardly a ripple in the pond. So instead you can find my handle, Skirwingle, places like Mastodon or Blue Sky.
And I'm at The Void TLMB in various places, but I'm mostly just posting on Mastodon these days. You can check out my blog at tlmb.net/blog, where you can see my new regular puzzles with explanations. And newly, I've been putting up my old independent puzzles there too, having asked permission to do so. So you can check those out. At this point, we would like to say hello to our new listeners in Bosnia-Herzegovina, Cameroon, Egypt, Vietnam, Romania, Finland, and Saudi Arabia. Hi to you all. Welcome aboard. And a special hello and thanks to S. Fletch, who left us a comment saying that Off Grid had provided entertainment on some long walks. That's nice to hear.
Very kind.
If you'd like to send us a message, do feel free. We don't bite. Especially if you'd like to do that via the medium of a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, because that really helps us get
found. On Spotify, you have to have listened to at least 30 seconds of an episode before you're allowed to leave a comment. And on that point, thank you to whichever listener it was in Canada who recently left us 5 of those stars, which is the correct number. See you next time, folks. Bye-bye.
So are all, folks.
Off-grid is a TLF... Wait. No, don't fast forward. You might miss something. Right, okay. Off-grid is a TLMB production. Our theme tune is by The Trudy, who only have a blooming new single out, don't they? Yes, they do. See, I told you might miss something important. And not only that, they have a new mini album out. So go and check out their Bandcamp or thetrudy.co.uk for all their details. As ever, everyone, thank you very much for listening. See ya.
Did that joke make sense?